What choice do Californians have in this election? The biggest one of all. You have the power to choose a new direction for the Democratic Party, to break the back of a corrupt system of campaign finance that keeps a rigged economy in place.
Bernie Sanders. He'll stand up to Wall Street and make the wealthy pay their fair share and fight for tuition-free public colleges and universities. He has the best record on the environment of any presidential candidate and is the only candidate against fracking. Bernie has made the fight against injustice the work of his life. And now he's taken on a broken criminal justice system to stop racial profiling, prevent police misconduct, and end mass incarceration. Bernie Sanders. Make a plan to vote for Bernie this Tuesday, June 7th.
California, it's a long way to Washington, but you can send them a message they can't ignore.
I'm Bernie Sanders, Democratic candidate for president, and I approve this message.
Paid for by Bernie 2016.
Hi.
Home of the stars, through the airwaves and on the big screen, coming to you live from Hollywood, it's Rated G Radio with your host, Garrett Miller.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Rated G Radio. I am your host, Garrett Miller. For the next hour, we are going to be delighted and thrilled with a returning guest. And actually, for the first time in 4 years, this is the first time this has ever happened. We had a show that was happening back in March. And, you know, like with any show, I just kind of like go with the flow. We don't know where it's going other than we're going to have fun. And at the end of the hour, we get it wrapped up. But by the end of the first hour, we were just starting to get into like, you know, this dynasty or Dallas cliffhanger of something that was going on for our guest. And I said, well, we need to have you back because now we're not even halfway through your story. So we are lucky to welcome back Charmin McGraw to Rated G Radio. She was talking to us about, you know, living with a lot of, you know, like chronic pain and illness and some of the things that she was going through for quite some time. And it was, you know, kind of came on as a, I don't want to say a shock. So we're going to ask her to kind of give us the Cliff Notes version of what we talked about in hour one, just kind of the recap of where we took you through, and also encourage you to go back and listen to that archived episode. But then as we, you know, start talking about what's happening from that point forward, that's going to be this hour. So if you listen to episode one, Charmin, you're the only person that's had an episode one. So if you listen to episode one and now are tuning in for episode two, I'm sorry it's taken 2 months to make this, you know, return, come back to the program. But Charmin McGraw, welcome back to the show. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you. I'm so honored to get to do an episode two.
Episode two. Wow.
Charmin,
you know, it's
2-0.
It was so crazy because, I mean, seriously, I've never had a guest because, you know, the show shuts off at an hour. So it's not like, well, we'll just run a little over and we'll just – nope, the show shuts off whether I like it or not. That's all the time I've got on here. So I'm like, Charmin, we're out of time. We've got to go. And I've never had that happen before. So I commend you for being hopefully a first of many. I just really thought that was really kind of cool. But anyway,
well,
so tell us about yourself for everybody who missed the first ones to get them their whistle wetted so they'll want to go back and tune in for the first one. And then, you know, stay tuned for today.
Oh, great, great, great. Yeah, we'll start kind of up in the middle, but kind of backtrack a tad. So I was talking with you before about the journey that I had going from a petite size 2 to an athletic and always working out with fitness trainers and everything to one day literally having my life turned upside down with the symptoms of massive weight gain going from a size 2 to a size 22 in a year, gaining weight 11 pounds, as much as 11 pounds in 4 days, with my hair all falling out and a horrible rash all over my body. And I literally looked like I was pregnant with twins. And I had once, you know, I mean, my best friend at the time was on Baywatch and we were, you know, hanging out in Hollywood. She was a former Miss Universe. And so when I started having these symptoms, I went to doctors assuming that it was this easy fix and that they were going to help me. And then 7 years later, I still had no diagnoses other than, you know, doctors looking at me saying, this is your fault. It's all in your head. You need to diet more. and exercise more, and I worked, you know, 5 minutes a week with a trainer, and all of these crazy things that I could look back on. And, you know, one doctor had me on 11 different medications at one time, and all I kept saying is, this is not me. I'm not a
right.
pill person. I'm not doing this for attention. No, you know, Garrett, here's the funny thing. I love Newport Beach, you know, where anorexia is a compliment, not a disease. So
thank you. Right. Exactly.
You know? So I'm this petite size too. And people used to go, oh, I want to go work out with you. What do you do? And then you start gaining weight and everybody looks at you like, oh, she's, you know, what the hell is she doing? Sitting all around eating bonbons and not taking care of herself. I mean, here I'm working my ass off. You know, I'm doing everything right. And doctor after doctor just keeps looking at me like, wow, you got a lot of health problems. And I'm like, but why? Tell me why. And nobody could tell me why. And the sicker I got, the longer the health issue laundry list got on their back and didn't want to listen. And nobody wanted, and, you know, and friends started turning away. And I completely looked like a different person. But the good news is, eventually, where we left off last time, where I was saying
right.
I had started this spiritual center, and I, through this whole thing, I had started on, I was always a really spiritual, intuitive person, so that part wasn't different, but I really allowed myself to only take care of myself for a while. Like, I was a big caregiver. I was a big codependent, I guess, in those days, you know, used to call it, but where everybody's life, I was living everybody else's life but my own. So
mm-hmm.
this was kind of, and it was like one of those things, I was really pretty. And so I kind of just went out with these men that, you know, like, I knew I wasn't going to marry them. I really wasn't, they weren't my type. I wasn't theirs, but we looked good together. So, you know, nobody,
yeah.
you know, one of those things. So through this experience that I had, all this, everything that I thought was who I was just kind of ripped away. And I wasn't the pretty girl anymore. I wasn't skinny. I was, you know, obese by all means. My beautiful long blonde hair had fell out. I had this rash that covered my entire face. I literally looked like a different person. I started losing my memory, and I couldn't articulate sentences, kind of like I'm doing right now, but but eventually what happened is I started going to the spiritual center, and one of the things that I took a class, it was Agape up in LA, and I took a class, and they said, if all your needs were met and you had no limitations, what would be your heart's desire? And at that moment I said, to be well and to live my life. And at that moment, I knew what was wrong with me. I had been researching all through my medical records, and this one thing that doctors kept telling me had nothing to do with why I was sick. It was a hormone called cortisol. And in my lab, a few doctors, not all of them, I had went to maybe 20 doctors more, but just about two of them had actually tested this hormone cortisol, and in both it was high. But every time I'd ask, well, why is that hormone high, they'd say, oh, because you're obese, or oh, don't worry about it, it's just stress. But that hormone was triple the normal level. It wasn't just slightly elevated.
Sharon, can I ask you a question? Was this before cortisol became like the big buzzword? Because until the last few years, I've never heard of this.
Right. Yes. The work that I've done now is kind of one of those things where I've really helped to publicize more, like what this hormone does. And, you know, we hear about, you know, some of these diet things that I do not recommend on, you know, lowering your cortisol. A lot of doctors are hyped now saying, oh, you're burning out your adrenal glands. Well, cortisol, just so you know, is your one life-sustaining hormone. And it's as important to have cortisol as it is to have a heartbeat. So,
wow.
Yeah, people don't even realize we cannot live without our pituitary gland. And cortisol comes from our adrenal glands, but it's one of those organs that has to talk to something. It has to have a signal. And the signal comes from the pituitary gland, which produces a nice little hormone called ACTH. And this ACTH is called adrenal corticotropic hormone. And those two, so that hormone has to talk to your adrenal glands. And when that hormone talks to your adrenal glands, you make your life-sustaining hormone cortisol. That helps us get up in the morning. It helps us go to bed at night. And it's regular. It kind of fluctuates all day long, but it's one of the most important hormones we make. It's like I said, it's the one life-sustaining hormone. So This little pituitary gland that sits at the base of your brain, right between your optic nerve. So if you went straight behind your nose, at the base of your nose, you would hit right there at the pituitary gland, and it's connected to the base of the brain through a little stalk that in the hypothalamus is all the anatomy of it is quite fascinating. But it's this tiny little thing, and most endocrinologists, unfortunately, even though they should know the whole endocrine system, generally they specialize in maybe diabetes or thyroid, but really to get to the bottom of this this little gland when it's causing hormonal issues, you need a really good neuroendocrinologist. And
thank God,
in the end, I ended up with the best neuroendocrinologist. But so long story, but I went to, so I started going to this, my spiritual center. I took the class and I realized something just told me inside that this cortisol that I kept seeing in these lab work was the trick, was the problem. So I left that meeting immediately, drove home and went to a friend's house and borrowed his computer because I didn't even have one 16 years ago. And so when I put in the word cortisol, we didn't have Google really, so up came an article about Cushing's disease. And when I read the symptoms, I just started crying. I knew I had diagnosed myself with this, what was considered a rare disease. But now that, you know, I've been an advocate for patients with pituitary disease and things for 16 years, now, you know, I said, it's not so rare. Yes, it's uncommon, but doctors were historically taught that it's rare. What we find now, I think it's just rarely diagnosed properly is the problem. So I ended up after this, what we also were talking about was where at one point I figured out what I had. I needed a doctor to verify that this high levels of cortisol and all these major symptoms, obesity, the moon face, the hair falling out, the rash on my face, the high blood sugars, high blood pressure, never sleeping at night, all were stemming from this tiny little gland causing too much cortisol. So I got an appointment. I was told about these doctors up in LA, and Dr. Daniel Kelly and Dr. Pejman Kohan ultimately are the two that that literally saved my life. And Dr. Kelly is now, he opened his own neuroscience center up in LA, and it's now one of the largest neuroscience centers worldwide, and it's called the Pacific Neuroscience Institute or the Pacific Brain Tumor Center. So after I got the part that we left, this is the cliffhanger right here.
The cliffhanger.
So I had made the appointment to get up to see Dr. Kelly and Dr. Kohan. And at the time, I started questioning myself. It took 2 months at that time. It wouldn't take that now to get in, but at that time, it took 2 months to get in to see them. And I started questioning myself, like, is this really what I have? I mean, why, if I could find it on the internet, did these doctors continuously miss this? And why, like you, have I never heard of something like this? If there's such a disease, why the hell isn't it in the public? Why don't people know how serious this horrible pituitary disorder can be? And so I get to I'm listening to the radio at the time, and I hear on this radio channel they were looking for salespeople. So I go, I get an appointment, ironically, with no sales experience, to this huge radio station to get an interview. And on my way up to this interview, now keep in mind, I weigh 300 pounds almost by this point. I'm very sick, and I have an appointment in 2 weeks to see this neurosurgeon and neuroendocrinologist to to see if I can have my life back, which, you know, I believed that God had told me, or the universe, or whatever you want to call it, had said, I have a bigger picture. And
right.
If you listen to the first half, we talk about how this person one night in a dream came to me and said that in, you know, I was praying to be well and that I was asking God to heal me. And this person came to me who was Joseph from the story in the Bible and said, in God's eyes, there's no illness. And I'm like, I'm pretty sick. I'm proof there is, you know. But like he said, but only in this human experience can you have illness in, you know, and it's only a journey. It's not an illness. It's only a journey. And at any time, there's no illness though, in God's eyes or in our perfect form. So I started just experiencing the journey instead of looking at myself like I was sick. And then I met, Dr. Kelly and Dr. Cohan. But before that, I had got this interview. I ended up in front of the sales team and the head of the sales team. And he, at that point, he and I built a weird, quick relationship, you know, just something was there. And so we were talking, and here I'm thinking I had made a deal with God on my way up there that I wanted my life back. I really didn't want the job at this radio station to make a lot of money, but I wanted my life back. I wanted to be well and healthy and happy. So on the way up to the LA, I said, listen, I believe my life has a bigger purpose. But if I'm crazy and I really don't have Cushing's disease and these doctors in 2 weeks are going to tell me I'm nutso, then at least let me have this job so I can make a lot of money until I just die, I guess, you know?
Right.
So, you know, is that what we think? Like, oh, well, maybe we could just make money and it'll make everything better.
Right.
You know, which it doesn't. It can help, but it doesn't. So I get up there. I meet with one person. Then I meet with this head of the radio station. And we talk for like 15, 20 minutes. And all of a sudden, out of the blue, he kind of shuts the door and he says, I could lose my job for this, but I have to say something to you. And I'm like, okay. I'm thinking, wow, what? This is really weird. And he said, I will hire you. You do, if you can tell me if all your needs were met and you had no limitations, that your heart's desire would be to sell airtime, then you have this job. But when you walked in here, God told me that you have a bigger deal with him, and that deal is not selling airtime, but it's a bigger picture. And I could be totally wrong, and I could lose my job for saying that, but I think I had to say that. And I'm like, I was so in shock that I thought I literally was going to fall off my chair. because
I mean, who said that, you know?
Who says that in this interview? Plus, I just told God, and that's exactly what they had said to me. If all your needs were met and you had no limitations, what would be your heart's desire? And that's the moment that I figured out what I had. And so I'm looking at this guy, and I told him, I don't need the job. I know what my purpose is. And I said, I go to this spiritual center, Agape, and he goes, oh, my God, Reverend Michael and I grew up together. No wonder you got this interview. It was just one thing after another that just affirmed that my life was just as important to the universe as anybody. You know, I mean, the universe could have just sent me on the appointment. I could have got the doctors to say, yes, this is what you have. But the fact that I questioned myself, and the universe had such a sense of humor and personality that they said, okay, well, we're going to confirm for you in this weird, bizarre way that to let you know we're serious here. You
right.
Know?
Oh, my gosh.
It was really bizarre. But I talked to Dr. Kelly and Dr. Cohan, and the minute I meet them, they confirm, yes, everything you've gone through for 7 years, this horrible, horrible disease that doctors are highly uneducated about, we are the experts and we can help you. And my God, nobody wants to hear, nobody wants to hear they have a brain tumor or a type of brain tumor or a skull-based tumor or any kind of tumor, basically. However, most pituitary patients have suffered so long by doctors telling them over and over and over again there's nothing wrong with them when they know there is, and the symptoms and all of this stuff, and society just regarding them because they seem like total hyperchondriacs.
Right.
When you hear, but when a pituitary patient hears, yes, you have a tumor, ironically, they're relieved. They're actually happy to hear it. Not happy in a that way, but happy to know that they're absolutely not crazy and that there's now a way to get better and a way to fight. Tumors are life-threatening, and you will die from them. And the longer you're undiagnosed, the sicker and sicker and the worse the symptoms and your health become. So, you know, early diagnosis is obviously the key to anything, but especially with these tumors. And the part that's really ironic for me is the type of tumor I had is so microscopic small that it wasn't even seen on the MRI, because 30% of these types of ACTH-producing tumors are not even – they're so little and they're so deadly that they aren't even seen on an MRI, which makes it even worse that doctors are uneducated.
Yeah. Even super, you know, hard.
It's ridiculous. And so – thank God the doctors, you know, Dr. Kelly and Dr. Cohan are, you know, knew exactly that that didn't mean I didn't have the disease. I had proven, all my lab work had proven it. So, and I had went to onto another test that confirmed also that the source, and it's the IPSS test that they put these tubes into your, literally up your groin and into your brain, and can confirm that that's the source where the tumor was coming from. Or the high cortisol and high ACTH was coming from. So at the time, you know, Dr. Kelly had said, listen, when I can't see the tumor on the MRI, there's always that chance I can't get the tumor, but I'm going to try as hard as I can. But I just want you to know, I mean, that's always a possibility. Surgery is never 100%, especially in these cases where the tumor is undefined. So I went to Agape that week before my surgery, or a couple of weeks before my surgery, and I started meditating because I just knew that the universe hadn't brought me this far just to now let me down, you know?
Right.
So I started meditating and asking where the tumor was, and I started getting a pain on the left front side of my head, right in the middle. And I go, oh man, wow. And then I realized, oh my gosh, that's where the tumor is. And when I recognized that pain, and so I talked to Dr. Kelly and I said, and thank God this man has no ego. Like, he's this brilliant, world-renowned neurosurgeon, and yet he is the most kind and loving, you know, no ego man that you could meet, which was the perfect person to put me with, you know.
Right, exactly. You needed that.
I needed that because I needed someone to understand that I was serious about getting well, for one thing. So I called Dr. Kelly had called before surgery, and I said, I know where the tumor is. And he said, well, tell me, so that way we both know. You know? And I had told him, listen, I'm very intuitive. I know my body. And when I was meditating, I know it's on the left front side, right in the middle of my gland. And Dr. Kelly said, thank God he said this to me. He said, Charmin, the only place on your MRI that looks suspicious is the left front side, right in the middle, and that's where I was going first. Yeah. And after surgery, I could barely speak. My doctors were all around me in the recovery room, and I said, Dr. K, where was it? He said, right where you told me. And
oh, my goodness. Wow.
It's really amazing. And I, now for the past 16 years, I've advocated for patients with Dr. Kelly, with Dr. Cohan, and other, there's a handful of really top neurosurgeons in the world that do this type of surgery well and have good success rate. Dr. Kelly being like in the 1% of those, and it just really, he and Dr. Cohan basically, for the next 18 months after my surgery, really helped me get my life back. And one of the things that came out of it, I'm totally dyslexic, and we kind of touched on that in the last time I was on. And so one of the things that, and how we know each other is because dyslexic wouldn't even write a note to someone before all of this. And what I realized is I wanted to help people on a larger scale. So I had to overcome a fear of writing. And because I knew at this point to help a lot of people, I had to learn to write. I had to learn to speak to mm-hmm. doctors. I had to learn to get into the public. And I did. And I took a class on writing, and this teacher took an interest in what I was writing about this disease and my story. And we sent out, you know, like 13 query letters to magazines, and Women's Day picked up my story. And I was so happy the day that they said they wanted to publish my story. And the editor at the time called me and she said, you know, we'll have someone write your story, blah, blah, blah. And I said, I'm a writer. And I was like, what? Ah. Why do I say that? I'm like, I can write it. So she said, well, typically we would have someone write your story, but I'm going to help. I'm going to let you write the story. And I'm thinking, what?
Mm-hmm.
And so I wrote it. She told me I did as well as anybody that any of her writers had done. And it was published and went out to over 10 million readers. And
oh my gosh.
it helps thousands of patients. It helped build awareness. Another big London magazine contacted me through that and had me write a story for them. And then I was asked to speak for the American Medical Association with Dr. Kelly in New York with all these top pituitary experts. And the media went crazy over my story. And that kind of really transformed me getting in front of the media and really just helping move this awareness more publicly. And so the kind of the things that you see from the last 16 years are things that I've worked on in a small group of advocates that I've grown to love and work with through the years. All of us have been trying to move that golf ball one inch closer to the sun. And I think we've done a job. I think we have to do a lot more, like you said, now you know what the word cortisol is. We never knew that before, you know, and now you'll see in movies like, oh, she had a pituitary tumor, even on House,
right.
Different things. So, yeah, the people are starting.
So
to
you're
really
responsible for bringing cortisol to the forefront of American culture, and the same with Cushing's disease.
Exactly. Wow. I was part of it. You know, you can't do anything in life alone. I know that. But what I was so excited about is in how we met then. So this writing was always such a passion to me. I mean, but I was so afraid of it. And I was so afraid to let anybody be exposed to the world because I was so dyslexic. I couldn't put two words, sentences together spelled correctly. But like anything, if you have a passion, you can learn it. I mean, writing is a learned thing. Just like, you know, sure, you have to have some kind of inspiration and things like that. But you can be good at things you thought you never could be good at.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, I mean, and so now, and I'm an artist. And so I really find my creativity to be what really keeps me going. And keeps my health in check and keeps my spirit in check. And so now I'm working on three novels. Well, it's a trilogy. And because I grew up on Nancy Drew mysteries and
Boys. The best.
And I watch Netflix. I'll binge watch Netflix. Please, are you kidding me? I mean, there's nothing like a good mystery on Netflix. So now what I'm working on is the first book is called Dying to Date, and the second book is called Dying to Marry, and the third is Dying to Divorce. And then,
I love it.
Yeah, it's so fun, and this character is so good, Christina Trulli. She's a relationship expert who's never picked the right guy for herself at 40 years old.
Of course.
You know, I mean, a little bit of my life in there. Of course, Audrey character has a little bit of something. But she's this relationship expert, totally dysfunctional in her relationships. A couple people end up dying or dead. That have a thing they have in common is her workshops. So she gets involved with solving this mystery. And it's it's a love story. It's a cozy mystery, but it is fun to write.
And so when will we expect to have these on the bestseller list?
I love it. Well, I finished my first draft of Dying to Date, and now I'm going back in and doing all the edits, and you know how that is. That's the hard part.
Do you edit yourself, or do you have somebody else do that for you, and you have to go in and make corrections?
Yes, I'm going in and doing the rewrites right now, and polishing up professionally an editor and all of that. I strongly believe in all hiring professionals to do what you're not good at, you know?
Well, sometimes it's the forest through the trees, you know, and you're like, oh, every word in here is perfection. There's not a missed comma. Every Oxford comma is in there exactly where it should be. Every semicolon. And then you go back and reread it a month later and it's like, who wrote this? Was this a child? You know?
I know. That's so true.
Sometimes you need that distance, but having that objective third eye that's, you know, not emotionally attached to every vowel is just really crucial to making sure that you're you know, good to go. So I had no idea, Charmin, that all of this was going on. So see, this is why I love having people like you on the show, because then we learn all of these really fascinating things about you.
Well,
oh, my goodness. How has your life changed? Well, I still want to talk writing, but how has your life changed now that you have been diagnosed and treated and, you know, all of the kumbaya stuff has happened over the last couple of years? Where is your life now as a result?
After surgery was quite a shock, because here you go along, you're sick, and your whole world is revolving around, like, how do I get diagnosed? How do I get better? How do I live? How do I keep a roof over my head? And all these things. And then, you know, you have surgery and you're told, okay, the tumor's gone. Basically, you're in remission. So go live your life. But when you've been what is my life? And what I had to do is literally just put one foot in front of the other. And for me, I dove right into helping people, which is good. But it's also something that for the first 10 years, I did full speed ahead and still never took care of my life. And finally, you know, you can get burned out real easy when you're helping sick people all the time. And so I really encourage people that are advocates to take a step back and always remember that your life first, because people will suck you dry. I mean, it's not their fault. It's that we don't know where to put the boundary. We don't know where the line is, so they don't know where the line is. So everybody's over the line, and we don't know how to push them back over the line, you know. So I really had to learn that lesson, and I think I'm still learning it, but to really prioritize my life. So now, you know, my life is great. I've never gotten down to a size 2. Hello, universe. But
you look great, because when you told me that you were over 300 pounds, it's like I wouldn't know a size 2 of you, but I can see a size 2 in you, but I wouldn't know a 300 pound version of you.
Isn't that funny? Well, and you know, hey, listen, this is what I tell people: same person is that 300 pound person. You know, I mean, we are the size 2, we are every part of our life, and every part of our life should matter as much as the next part of our life, because when you start defining yourself as, oh, I was happy at a size 2, oh, I was happy at a size 10, oh, I remember my brother when I was really young and always is this my butt look good in these pants? Do my butt look good in these pants? You know, my brother looked at me one day and said, why don't you just pick a weight and be happy? Because I remember you not being happy at a size 2. I remember the same thing as a size 10. I mean, you know, just pick a weight and be happy. And he was, and I remember him going, why do you think everybody's looking at your ass? And I'm like, I don't know. I guess you just think everybody's looking at you.
Aren't they looking at my ass? Yeah, right.
I think the biggest lessons that I learned in this whole thing is to be me, like me at every level, me at when I'm on Weight Watchers or I'm not, or I'm drinking a glass of, you know, red wine, or I'm eating broccoli. I mean, every little bit of our lives contribute to the big picture. So I've really stopped, really told my girlfriend, it's like, if all I have to do is go out to see my friends and all they want to do is talk about the latest diet or something they saw on Dr. Oz and they're going to try it, you know what? I got better things to talk about and I have better things in my life. And, you know, you just try the best you can. Yes, we all want to eat healthy. Yes, we all want to get exercise. Yes, we all. But guess what? I also want to sit on the couch some days and binge watch, you know, a show on TV and just escape, because our life is not, you know, like all these years I went along before and I was living all these other people's lives and I was living in Newport Beach where it was like anorexia is a compliment and I, you know, had to be all these things. And then I realized, you know what, when those things are gone, who are you? Because your friends,
right.
If that's all they know of you and that's gone, then you're gone. And when they know you from being authentic, I think the thing that I really, really loved about this journey was I learned to be authentic. I learned that I'm actually funny. I like comedy. I like to write comedy. I like to be a sarcastic ass sometimes, but I also like to be a sweet, kind, compassionate person too. And I want people to really understand, like, you know, when you're looking at your life and you're saying, oh, I want it to be different. I want all these things. I want more money. I want more friends. I want more for my family. You got to start within and you got to say, okay, I can have all those things, but what's blocking me? Let me peel away all the BS that I put up every day in my life to be this real person. So the universe can actually hand me all the things that I had agreed to before I ever came to this, you know, carnation of a human being.
Isn't that kind of crazy though, that, you know, you do put up all of these barriers and you just find yourself in a life that is so, and sometimes I think you know, but you don't want to admit that you know. But you find yourself in this life that is very contrived. And you're like, okay, well, I guess I am keeping up with the Jones across the street. And I must have 3 Mercedes, not 2. And I need to have, and I need to have, and I need. And at the end of the day, does it really make you, you know, and I'm not saying there it wouldn't be nice to have 3 Mercedes, but. You know,
if that's
great.
Not what's controlling your life, you know.
Right. You know, and I think, you know, when you are able to step back a little bit from that and just take a look at what's really important to you, maybe a 3rd Mercedes isn't what's going to, you know, make you super, super happy for the rest of your life or the next 6 months or the next minute or whatever the case may be. I mean, I can't imagine even having a car payment on 1, let alone 3. So, you know, good for anybody who does that. But, yeah, you've got a great point, though, there, Carmen.
I think what I try to do is if that whatever it is I want defines me, then I don't need it. Because if it's just added blessing because the universe is abundant and there's no lack or limitations and we can have whatever we want, great. But if it's what drives my happiness or my contentment then I don't need it. And, I've had plenty of friends. In fact, I have a dear, dear, sweet girlfriend of mine right now. She's got lung cancer, and she was a designer and interior designer and, you know, always had the cutest everything, cutest little hairdos, cutest little body, cutest little everything. And at the end of the day, she's laying in a hospice bed with nothing, basically nothing. And she said, she said to me the other night, she said, well, honey, if I could put you in my car right now, it might be uncomfortable, but I'd take you anywhere you wanted to go. And she looked at me and she said, oh, Charmy, uncomfortable is always better than sick. And I said, yes. You're right, honey, you're right. And it just hit me, like, how many times do I go to the, I think, oh, I better go to the gym. I should go to the gym just to feel better. Not because of any other reason, but just for plain feeling better. And I'll go, ugh, but the parking lot's going to be so full. And there's probably
so many
people.
We got the ambulance going.
Yes, exactly. And so I started thinking, like, you know, I live so close to the ocean and I, you know, oh, the tourists, I don't want to fight the traffic, you know, and I just kept repeating in my head, uncomfortable is better than sick. And sometimes, you know, we have to push ourselves to something that's uncomfortable so we aren't sick. And sick comes in a lot of different forms, you know, sick is not always bad health.
Yeah, I agree with you. Well, we've got about 20 minutes left, and in nearly 2 hours of radio with you, Sherman, we barely talked about your writing. So if we could spend the next little bit of time just talking about maybe your writing process as you're getting ready to do three novels at once, which is kind of just as mind-numbing in itself in such an awesome way. As a writer who has a lot going on, you've got, you know, a day job, you've got your friends, you've got your social activities, and then you have writing as well. When, how do you structure your life to find time to write? And what is that process like for you?
For me, I'm the type that when I get it, when I either get up early in the morning, I like to write. I have to have real quiet. I don't have a TV on. I don't have anything distracting me. I could sit
right.
for hours and never look up because I love telling a story, and I love telling it on on the pages. And for me, I have to really do things that inspire me. Like sometimes I have to get myself in the mood for it. So I might light my favorite candles because those kind of smells and tastes and things all trigger my inner senses. And once my creativity starts, I'm the type that I could just do it all day long. Unfortunately,
wow.
because life does get in the way, you know, you do have to work. And one of the things that I'm working on right now is I'm working too much. And the work, okay, so everybody works a lot, but the work has to be fulfilling. I'm kind of evaluating right now. Is the work that's paying my bills even remotely fulfilling? Because when it's not, I don't feel motivated to do the things that do fulfill my life. So I'm really trying to say, okay, wait a minute, I need to beat back up because I'm not writing enough. I'm not painting enough. And that's not coming from the fact that I'm not creative and I don't have the time. The thing it's coming from is because something else is zapping my energy and my creativity.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a job that I'm really should not be doing because it's really as far extreme from my personality and what I want to be doing. And that, so I've got to look at that and decide, you know, I need to make a few changes there. And one of the things that I want to make a change on is because I paint and I have a really cute children's line, I've created my own characters. I really want to, and I had at one time my own furniture line for children and stuff like that. And I think, you know, I want to start doing that again. I want to start being starting my children's furniture line again. And I think that will in itself take some of the juju that I'm not,
sure.
and help me write again, because when you're doing creative things or in your spare time, and that then you'll want to do more creative things because it just breeds it. When you're just drained and going to a job every day that's really not you, you have to stop and look and say, look, yeah, I like the money, I like this, and I have responsibility, but maybe there's something else I could do for those 8 hours a day that don't leave me as drained, and so that I can come home and really have a life that I love. And I don't want to define myself by the job that job. I want to define myself as being a creative writer and a person that loves to laugh and make people laugh and do things that I can inspire children and create this beautiful children's line that I know I can financially donate more, you know, part of the money to children that mean something to me. You know, so, you know, we always have to kind of take two steps back and look at our lives sometimes. So I don't have an easy answer on that question that what do I do? I kind of think we have to keep watching because little things sneak in our life that keep us from doing things. So if I'm not writing enough, I have to stop myself and say, why? What is it? It's not really that we don't have enough time because we can always make time. So for me, I love to write at night. It's one of the problems. So I'd all write till 2, 3, 4, 5 in the morning. but you kind of have to find your own rhythm, don't you? Do you do that too?
I can only write at night. And I'm not a day writer. I'm a good day editor, but I'm not a good day writer. And so like when I get done with the show tonight, and I'm starting on my book 2 and book 3, and that's when I'll sit down. And but I also have to be like divinely inspired, because if I don't have it, you know, if it's not coming to me, now I might write a really witty post on Facebook, as one might do every once in a while,
yeah,
or I might send a really clever email, or I might come up with an idea for a song, or I might, you know, so there are other ways I can be creative. But from a writing standpoint, if I don't have that lightning bolt that's just come through my head, it just doesn't happen. And you know, like you know, you've already got a boilerplate, or you've got a foundation for what you want to talk about in book 1, 2, and 3 for your character. And for my books, you know, I'm just telling stories which I hope are funny. And, you know,
hilarious.
And I've already outlined all 30 chapters, 10 chapters a book. So book 1's done, it's at the editor now. Book 2, I have to sit down and start writing. But I already know what I'm going to write, but unless it comes to me, Sharman, I just say, okay, maybe tonight's not the night. And I'll tell you, I have writer after writer after writer who says, you know, when you get to that point, you just start writing anyway. And then if you have to go back and scrap it all later, you go back and scrap it all. And I think that really does work for a lot of folks. That concept just doesn't work for me, because I either know, you know, where I want that story to go, and I know if I'm going to start getting it to go there, and I also know when I'm just like fooling myself. And if I'm fooling myself, it's like, well, I don't need to waste my time fooling me, because I know I'm just fooling me. So why don't I do something else that's really going to do something better?
I'm right there.
I struggle.
You said it exactly right on. That is me. I always say I'm divinely creative. Creative. I'm divinely creative, because if it isn't there, I cannot pick up a pen. I couldn't draw a stick figure.
Right.
If it's not there, it's not there. And even I hear those writers from our writers group, and they're like, oh no, I write 8 hours a day. God,
how?
I don't know.
That
because
might really be really
clothes,
a fun thing to do for like the first 2 weeks. But after that,
yeah,
you know, like I need to go to the store.
Me too. I know. I'm right there with you, honey. That's me. I have to write when I'm inspired.
And I guess that's one reason why I don't beat myself up a lot about either the volume or the lack of, because when I write, again, like you, boom, 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 and I look at my clock and I'm like, it's 2 o'clock in the morning. I should have gone to bed 4 hours ago. What the heck happened? Because the time flies by. But then on the days that it doesn't. So let me ask you about the kids' furniture collection. Goodness gracious, you just have your hands in everything. You had that line going before. Where do you sell children's furniture?
Well, I have sold it. I give a lot to charity, so I can raise money that way without actually handing them a check. And then I did interior. A lot of the interior designers used to buy for me. I did wall murals for a lot of years, nurseries and stuff. I actually had Barney's of New York interested in my stuff at one time, and I shipped a bunch of stuff. And I was young and dumb, and I shipped at UPS, and I didn't realize, and it got in a train accident, and it was demolished.
No.
Yeah. But was probably for the better, because I couldn't have kept up with the volume from, like, you know, Barney's of New York or anything. But I think right now, but I have started again. I got a couple pieces going, and I've built some new characters, and so it's fun and I love it. And it's a way for me to give back to kids, and I want to, you know, make sure I always give to part of my stuff to charity.
I love that idea. So from a furniture standpoint, when you say kids furniture, I have no clue what that means. Is it a teeter totter or a bunk bed, or what are you building?
Well, I do little tot table and chairs, and I found these little tot table and chairs years ago, and they're the perfect style. They have a flat top, flat sides, a lot of area for me to paint. And so, and now I'm almost out of them. I had bought all that they had at one time, and now I'm trying to find a place to copy the pattern, and I've met with a couple people to start that process. So hopefully, keep my fingers crossed that I can get that process done, so I can continue to do these really, really cute table chairs. Next time I see you, I'll show you some pictures.
Oh, I'd love to see that. And so you do murals as well?
I did. I don't want to go in people's houses and do murals anymore, but I'd rather not sell directly to the public. I'd rather sell wholesale or you know, I also do these really cute pillow shams, and I actually got to paint. I painted for for a couple people, like, you know, Hollywood people and stuff. I've painted a few things. And so I don't want to paint wall murals anymore, but if I can paint toy boxes, I painted pillows. I paint on fabric really well. And so I do these really cute pillows that kids can sit in front of the TV with, and little toy boxes, and
what kind of stuff
chairs.
You put on them?
I have my own little carrot. Well, I can paint Disney like nobody else. I can paint like Cat in the Hat really good, but I can't sell
gosh.
Those. But I can sell that. I mean, I can give those to charity and they bring in a lot of money. But my own little, like, I find this little guy. I'm going to do one for space, outer space. So I've got a little rocket ship and a little guy with this little glass helmet. He looks like a little Martian and he's standing on a planet. And I have a really cute little hippo. She's in a tutu, and I love animation. So I wanted to do animation my whole life, and it's just what I'm good at. And I love color. I love all that kind of stuff. Mermaids. Everybody's into mermaids. So now I've developed this little mermaid, and she has some really cute little fish around her. And
what's a perfect day for you?
A perfect day?
Sherman, I think I lost you here. There we go.
There, you hear me? I went to the little park by my house today and did Tai Chi. It was amazing, fun. And then I went and ran a few errands, came here, I'm reading a mystery right now, book two, that I really good. And then I got to talk to you. So it's a
Yay.
Day.
So now, and I'm so excited that things have just made this huge turnaround for you. Because again, you don't know until you've walked in a mile in somebody's shoes, and you've shared part of your journey here with us, Sherman. And so neat having you on here today. If you could describe yourself in like three words, could you pick three, and what would they be? I'm trying to do like now the actor studio, you know. But
I'd say my three favorite things. First is authentic. What you see is what you get. And I might be, you know, big heart. My heart, I have passion. Like, I'm really passionate about life and people. And the third thing is to live happy, you know, to make your happiness. I make my happiness. I don't look for it. I make it. And those would be things that really, really describe me.
I love that. I love that. Back as a writer, though, I'm going to have like two more questions, then I'm going to let you go, because I know that you, even on this day, you still have other things to do. But when you got ready to write your first line in your first book that's going to be out later this year, did you have the characters developed first, or did you already know the story?
I had this character, Christina Truly, we call her KT. I've had her for years and years, and I've written her a lot of different ways. I have a blog that and the blog is written from Christina Truly. It's dating for the clueless. And
I love it.
And I actually started her in a book called 40-something and single, looking for Mr. Right. And it just didn't feel right. I had written a lot and I liked it, but it didn't feel right because I love mystery. So one day I woke up and I'm like, oh, I figured it out. Dying to date. Christina Truly. She, you know, solves the mystery.
Okay. That is so cool. That is, you know, I'm just always interested on where it comes from, because you know, everybody says, oh, I kind of knew this, or I kind of knew that, or I've been living with this character for years, and, you know, finally they have their own voice. I think that's cool. What advice would you give two parts, what advice would you give to those who are suffering from anything that's out there today? And then the second question I'm going to ask is about writing. So if we got people out there who are maybe not feeling so hot today, what would you like to tell them?
I always tell them, listen, if you believe that there's something wrong, we know our bodies better than anybody. We do. And if it is something that you, honest to God, feel there's something wrong, that's just not right, go to a doctor, go to another doctor, go to another doctor. Do not let doctors dictate your health. always, always. And what I like to remind people is go to the ones that specialize in it. There are centers that are of high volume. You want to go to centers of excellence, not just a Joe Schmo that your uncle told you or your aunt's been going to for 20 years. Really seek out the top people in a field.
And then finally, for people who are writers, because again, we met through Southern California Writers Association and at the monthly meetings out in Fountain Valley, which is, I still call it Huntington Beach, but it's Fountain Valley off of the 405 and the Claim Jumpers there. It's every month on Saturdays, I think from like 10 to 1 or something like that. And you know, by the way, just a nice shout out to Larry, who runs the group. Everybody who attends, Jeff, Jill, who's, my next door neighbors who have invited me there, and everybody who's made me feel so welcome. But that's where we met, Sherman. And just selfishly, from my perspective, I've been so inspired by the people that go to that for a variety of reasons. Number one, they're talented, they're interesting, they've got great stories, and they're also, every single person that I've met there's been so willing to help anybody else with anything if there's a hand that's raised. And I think that is really admirable for a group of people who are, really self-employed. So, that's nice to see such a willingness to help others. But for anybody out there who's a writer or aspiring writer, and, because this has come, it's been kind of a struggle for you. You said, you were dyslexic growing up. What would you like to tell people who are aspiring creatives that need a word of encouragement today?
I'm going to tell you, if you are someone that is creative and you love creativity and you feel it from your soul, you have to do it. If you don't, that, in my opinion, is what starts illness. I just believe that when you are fighting against something that you believe that you love, regardless if you ever become famous or you ever sell anything, it is secondary. You have to do your craft. You have to create, and you have to share it, regardless if you make money sharing it, because creativity is to be shared. It's a gift. And I honestly believe people that deny that to themselves and get caught in their rut, and just do work or whatever, I believe that's what really starts an illness. And we create our own health issues by not really doing what we should be doing in our gifts and our talents and sharing them with the world.
So, and I'm not putting words in your mouth, Sherman, but according to Sherman, if you live your dreams and pursue your passions, you're not going to get sick. So you should do that. You still got to pay your rent, folks. So do that, but make sure you're doing something fun for yourself today. Would you please? And as a thank you to everybody who's been sending me notes, who's been leaving nice comments on YouTube, please remember, you can go out and take a look at my new single, Unlike You. It's now available on iTunes as well. But of course, you can order it directly from my website, GarrettMiller.com. This is a snippet, you got 2.5 minutes of snippet, a snippet of Unlike You for you for being great listeners here to the show. We will see you live tomorrow. And I wish you all a great rest of your day. Sherman McGraw, thank you so much for being part of Rated G Radio. I love to have you here. You come back anytime.
Love you.
Picture just the other day, it looked good in black and white. Memories of love, they dim over time. We never were quite right. Sometimes it's just storm clouds above that drift into our sight. Tears fell like rain, the ocean waves crashing, passing by in the night. The lightning made you blind. Unlike you, I see me. The man I cannot friend, the man I can't pretend to be. Unlike you, I see me. Time I cannot spend chasing after make-believe. one would be so easy, reliving all those blacked out days. Could I make it all up, fake it all once again? You'd think I'd finally lift the haze. Sometimes it's just storm clouds above that drift into our sight. Tears fell like rain, the ocean waves crashing, passing by in the night. The lightning made you blind. Unlike you, I see me, the man I cannot friend.
You've been listening to Rated G Radio.
Yes, Abigail, PetSmart has a wide variety of fancy feast, friskies, and canned food kibble and treats from Meow Mix, I Am Sheba, and Temptations.
Ow, ow.
You want every flavor? At these low prices, how can I resist?
Now at PetSmart, save on your cat's favorite flavors with our unbeatable price guarantee. PetSmart matches any competitor's in-store or online every day or in-store advertised price on an in-stock identical product. Excludes pets and services. Restrictions apply. See store associate or PetSmart.com for details.
Let's go to PetSmart.
Ow.
Yes, you can ride shotgun in the cart.